Today is Wednesday. It is March 9th.
Thursday.
Start again.
When I had such, you know,
you had such energy.
I do one on Wednesdays, too. Today is Thursday. It's March 9th, 2017. Today is Thursday, March 9th, 2017. It's 11:12 a.m. I'm John Williams. These are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios at WGN Radio. Portions of this can usually be heard on my Saturday morning show at 11 a.m. on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN, noon every weekday.
I'm Krista McQuarrie of the Tribune Editorial Board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the starchy columnist from the Tribune. My column appears Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Starchy. Thank you,
Eric. Finally, it applies.
Do we always have to talk about his adjective? Starchy, really?
I just touched his collar. It's not very starchy.
All right, maybe the theme for today's Mincing Rascals podcast should be elections have consequences. That may be good, that may be bad, but let's face it, it's the Republicans' turn. Donald Trump's president, and here's what you get. The ACA, which now stands for the American Health Care Act, or Obamacare Lite, or Trump Care. You get a paranoid Twitter boss who insists that former President Obama tapped his phone in Trump Tower, but you don't get spell check. Anyway, let's start with health care. The GOP plan is to get rid of the mandate and replace it with refundable credits. And for individuals to be able to purchase their own health insurance that way, it also proposes restructuring Medicaid. It defunds Planned Parenthood. The popular components, like your kids are on it till 26, many of those get to stay. Eric, what's your overall assessment of the Republican plan?
My overall assessment is that it's going to see fewer people covered and it's going to cost people more for their policies. And so it's a disaster and it's not going to pass. That's
oh, really?
Overall
no
assessment.
Kidding. Wow. Let's jump right to the prediction phase. Kristen, will this pass the Congress?
I believe it will, yes.
Well, she was just imitating Eric there. Did you see that?
She's very starchy.
We have one yes, one no. What do you think, Steve? What are you feeling?
Not the way it's written now. Many Republicans think it will not pass that way.
I saw a list of all of the groups that are in opposition to it. Many of them are liberal and Democrat, but many of them are, you know, AARP, the American Medical Association, and some conservative
Club
groups
for
too.
Growth, the Tea Party.
Heritage Foundation, yeah. Stuff like that. Kristen, what's good and bad about all of this? Thank you,
well,
Kristen. Eric, go.
So, I mean, Obamacare is broken. It needs to be fixed. I don't know that this is the exact fix, but it does keep the parts of Obamacare that people like. And Obamacare wasn't working. I mean, you had major insurers pulling out. They were losing a lot of money. Some people got coverage. Other people saw their premiums spike under Obamacare. So it needs to be fixed. And are people going to lose coverage under this? Probably they are. I mean, that's the bottom line. There are too many sick people who enrolled in Obamacare that it's heavily, heavily subsidized by taxpayers. And it's not working in its current form.
This is no way to measure it, but the number of the people whose premiums spiked will be dwarfed by the number of people who will lose coverage under the next plan, right?
That's why I said
this may not be good, this may not be bad, but elections have consequences. This may be what we want, we being enough people in the United States. You know,
well, but elections have consequences, John, but Donald Trump promised insurance for everybody. He promised lower costs, more costs.
People
are voting.
Whatever.
No. So you're saying, you're not saying that this is what the American public wants, because I believe when they poll this bill, this Trump Care bill, it's going to be extremely unpopular, especially when the Congressional Budget Office scores it.
Right.
And you're going to see it's going to cost people a lot more money and many fewer people are going to be covered.
And what if they want that, though, Eric? I mean, literally, what if the Congress votes for it? Then don't vote for those congressmen next time around. But I don't think it's, you know, I'm getting a little weary of everybody automatically and predictably saying this is worse or this will fail so many people. If it does, fine. Then throw the bums out and get some new ones. It's their turn.
But wait, this isn't passed. So why wouldn't you want people to say, to point out the problems with it now and maybe in the markup and the continuation thing, they will improve on those.
Oh, absolutely, Steve. No, I'm not saying I love this plan. I'm just saying that if this is the plan that passes, I'm almost okay with that. A, because I think it won't affect my coverage that much. And B, I mean, it's a very selfish thing, but I think that's how a lot of us score these things. And B, if this, you know, it's like, hey, guys, if you want to do this, if it's as bad and calamitous as Eric Zorn thinks, then they will suffer the consequences. Let them have at it.
But it's not just that. They will suffer the consequences of not being reelected to their cushy jobs, but there are going to be millions of people who are going to be thrown off their health care, like my brother-in-law. I mean, there are a lot of people who really have benefited from Obamacare. I've got friends in the music business who have Obamacare policies who swear by them, and you're going to have a lot of people who are hurt, not just congressmen and senators. And I think because of the number of people who are going to be hurt, they're not going to vote for it. And I don't think there's even much enthusiasm.
And you, Mr. Cushy, who keeps your plan, will be paying more because Eric's brother-in-law won't have insurance.
Yeah, well, and maybe, I'm sorry, maybe I should. I know I'm being very Minnesota passive-aggressive here, but I think
over it. You're coming back.
This was a huge issue in the presidential election and in congressional districts. Obamacare is not popular. So I think the idea of
Obama's not popular.
Every day passes, it becomes more popular.
It actually is popular now, Kristen. If you look at the polls, it's becoming more and more popular. As people actually take a look at it. And when you would poll the Affordable Care Act, people, that was more popular than Obamacare by like 10 points.
Well, when you ask them about the elements, you say, do you like this, do you like this, do you like this? They go, yes, 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 yes. That's Obamacare. But then you ask them, do you like Obamacare? And they say no.
I think what is missing from this discussion, though, is that Republicans, the idea of kicking people off health care plans is not going to be popular, of course, but Republicans have a philosophical problem with the big government reach of mandated coverage. I mean, that's the fundamental objection to this, is the government forcing you to have health insurance. So that's what is going to motivate Republicans to vote for a Obamacare light or whatever you want to call it, because the issue was, it wasn't so much the lack of coverage or the hike in premiums. It was the philosophical reason of
you're telling me that's why the people in Wisconsin and Kentucky and West Virginia and Southern Illinois voted for Donald Trump, because they didn't want the government to tell them to get insurance?
That's a big reason. Yes, one of the biggest, repealing Obamacare was one of the biggest reasons that Trump was elected.
Why are you suggesting otherwise, Steve?
No. I'll totally give you that, but I don't think it was specifically because there was a government mandate that they buy insurance. Let me say this,
it was government taking over health care.
Okay.
Like just the expansion
but as far
of
as
big
individual
government
mandates. What I meant.
Oh yeah.
No. Here's my discouraging thought for the day. I think that the American people are woefully uninformed when it comes to this issue and politics and government in general. And we tend to vote by whatever phrase catches our ear or by whatever party we tend to like. And that's why I think that it might not matter so much, Eric, if so many people lose their health care insurance, because they're going to be told they're better off and a lot of them are going to believe it. I mean, I was at dinner. Let me just say this. I was at dinner with my dear friends, a table filled with my dear friends a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about...
And we weren't there, you noticed.
No, and I didn't say my dear friends.
I was there. I don't know about you guys.
And remember I said, John, pass the bread.
Yes. And you had four martinis, Steve.
No,
I was watching.
And no one at the table understood what fake news was. Not one of them understood where fake news came from, the idea that it was this Facebook and these Macedonians and all that stuff. These are educated people. I think we overestimate sometimes the involvement of the average American and the understanding of the issues. Not that I understand it or we do, but I think a lot of people just don't get that tuned in. So if they're told it's a better deal for them, they're going to believe it. If they're told Obamacare sucks and is making their life awful, they're going to vote against it when they like everything that's in it.
Well, that's on them, Steve. That's on them. You know, all these people that put Trump in office who might now get worse health care. That's what you
it's
get.
It's on us, John. The point Eric's trying to make is it's we were supporting this not because we as individuals were going to be better off. It's better for the country if more people are insured.
It's liberal elite smarty pants.
I think what people voted for when they heard Donald Trump say we're going to have insurance for everybody and you're going to have a great policy and it's going to cost less is that people do want more people to be covered. And this is the philosophical problem that Kristen's getting to, is what role do we want the government to play in providing health care for people and assuring health care? And when you look at the poll numbers on that, those are extremely favorable. People want the government to make sure that people get basic health care, which is why I think that this Medicare for All idea is going to get some traction. It's probably not yet. Probably there's too many Republicans in Congress now. But I do think that we're headed that way, because once you get into this idea that the government is responsible for providing a basic level of health care, we don't want to throw people into emergency rooms and bankrupt people because they have medical problems. That's the answer that is the cheapest and the most efficient and the most effective.
But that is a philosophical difference with the party.
Yes.
There is a big disagreement over whether health care is a right, and there are a lot of able-bodied people who this is not my philosophy necessarily, but this is the party's philosophy. A lot of able-bodied people who could be out working who aren't working. And if you look at the expansion of Medicaid, even in Illinois, half of all births in Illinois are paid for on Medicaid.
Wow.
1 in 4 people in Illinois get health care coverage through Medicaid. And it's very expensive to taxpayers. It is heavily subsidized by taxpayers, and we're broke. So,
and yet you've got Tony Preckwinkle and Governor Rauner sort of on the same side, worried about losing their Medicaid.
Well, right, because Tony Preckwinkle is a big, she believes health care is a human right. There was a huge expansion and an early expansion of Obamacare for the Cook County health system. And again, every time she comes and talks to us about her budget, there's a big gap between what we can afford and what we're providing.
But the governor's on her. But I mean, she and the governor, two very different views, agree on that.
Given that you have, let's say, as you say, one in four births are on Medicaid. Let's say you cut Medicaid by half. Oh, half. Okay.
Half of births.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
I was thinking ahead of my question here. So let's say half of those we no longer pay for their birth. Who pays for that? Because they're not going to give birth in the backseat of a taxi.
Well, the point of that, Eric, is they don't want them to get pregnant. But keep going.
Okay, well, then you've ended the conversation. But I'm saying that these people are still going to need, whether they're on Medicaid or whether they're, in the emergency room, someone's going to, or Cook County Hospital, someone is going to pay that bill. And I'm not sure, and the most efficient way is through, you know, some sort of regular predictable thing where you're giving them this coverage, you're giving them this care without having to be in the context of an emergency room.
I feel like we're having the 10-year-old conversation. I thought we decided that – no, really, I mean it. I thought we had all agreed that we were, as a country, better off with more people insured.
I think we are too, but one of the problems is that we're not paying for it. And nothing in Obamacare or in the new proposal does anything to control the cost of health care, which far outpace the cost of living every year. We talked about this a little bit this morning. You still go to the hospital and you pay $60 for a Band-Aid. So until we do something like create more competition, like the new proposal would do, allow you to buy insurance across state lines, increase the use of health savings accounts so people are a little more accountable for what they are getting when they go to the doctor. Maybe you don't order the 17th test if you know that it's coming out of your own pocket. Those are ways to maybe reduce the overall cost of health insurance. But until we do that, it's just very expensive. And the nation is $20 trillion in debt.
Those are good ideas.
They're not all good ideas. Actually, they're selling insurance across state
health
lines.
Health savings accounts is a good idea.
Why is that a bad idea?
It's a race to the bottom. It's like when they eliminated state controls over credit cards. They all went to New Jersey and Nevada because they have like the lowest regulations and lowest standards. Insurance companies can sell in any state they want right now. Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, they can go any state they want and set up. They just have to follow those states' rules. What this would do, it would take away the states' rights to have any kind of control over their insurance markets. It would be a race to the bottom, which state has the flimsiest regulations, and all the insurance companies would base themselves there. And, you know, you might save money, but you would have all kinds of appalling kinds of policies. I don't think there's savings in that for anybody.
We buy all kinds of insurance across state lines, and I don't see that it was a race to the bottom. I think when you buy car insurance, you can do that. It brings down the cost when you have companies that arose out of the fact that you don't have those limits, like Geico and some of these, and Progressive, you had new people enter the marketplace. You don't have that now. You have you have the three major health insurance in this country pulling out of Obamacare. So something has to be fixed. And
you respond to this first. Do we all agree that the CBO score matters, that at least will be instructive? It doesn't have to be definitive, but we should hear what the Congressional Budget Office has to say.
Of course, yes. I mean, there will be people who will make an argument that it is not a neutral office, that the Congressional Budget Office is somewhat partisan. So we'll see what the number is, but yeah.
I'd never heard that, but I have heard the Trump administration say that the CBO was way off on the Obama estimate. I mean, that's one of the
arguments. Some estimates with Obamacare, they were off. But, you know, they're going to be off. The question is much more philosophical, as Kristen has pointed out, that when you're going to get into these numbers, I think it's inevitable this is going to cut people off their health care. And the question is whether philosophically we're okay with that.
Yeah.
We're getting rid of a lot of taxes right now. The plan, Trump Care, gets rid of a lot of the taxes that support the subsidies. If we cut these subsidies way back, people are going to lose their health care. And if you're in a big free market frame of mind, that's okay. That's the way it should be. And I heard some people interviewed on last night and this morning about this who are very strong free market types. And I think that's the way it should be. And so we're going to have that debate. And I think the CBS score will figure into that. But again, this is a philosophical debate we're having.
Well, it's March. If we did wackadoodle brackets, would Trump's accusation that Barack Obama tapped his wires in Trump Tower be the number one seed in the Trump wackadoodle tournament?
I think it's probably the wackiest.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Oh yeah.
Wackiest, the but they're taking it seriously.
The Nordstrom Ivanka tweet was very was wackadoodle too.
Where are we, fellas and gal, on the investigation into the millions of fraudulent votes? Have we made any progress on that?
Where are we in the lawsuits that he was going to file against the women who accused him of groping?
Yeah, right. You're reading, what is it, Clarence Page? Who was it that wrote
the
Tribune today?
I can see.
Steve doesn't believe a thing he reads.
Well, somebody's keeping score of all of Trump's promises, and I saw the same piece or a piece like this, and there aren't many of them that he's followed through on.
Well, maybe this was in it too, because I think I brought this up before. I'm interested in what they're doing to improve the extreme vetting, because they needed this 90-day stop so that they had time to improve it. Well, they haven't had the 90 days yet. I guess it's kicking in Monday. But they have had, a month since the first executive order? Have they been working during those last 30 days to improve the extreme vetting? Because presumably that's all they were doing, right, was buying time to help them make things tougher. I would assume they would use the last 30, but we haven't heard anything about that.
Wait a minute, extreme vetting. So you're talking
about
immigration.
Blank stares again.
You just segued right away. So I guess we've now given all the attention we need to the Barack Obama.
No, this was about, I'm sorry, this was about a promise or a language, because what they said was they needed the 90-day stop in order to improve the vetting process.
Right.
They've had 30 days since then to work on the vetting, but I don't know that they've been doing that, is what I'm saying. I guess I'm saying they're asking for the stoppage, but they're not really working on the problem that they think the stoppage is needed for. Okay, I've talked myself in a circle. Move on.
Well, but I just don't know what that has to do with Donald Trump accusing Barack Obama of tapping his lines.
Let me tell you what.
He doesn't. He took us on a little segue there.
Sorry.
It's okay. Let me make a prediction.
Thank you, Kristen.
Yes, you're welcome.
Trump is going to, the Congress or someone is going to come out and look into this accusation that Obama was bugging Trump Tower. They're going to find there's nothing to it, and Trump is going to do the same thing he did with the birther controversy. He's going to come out and say, I'm so glad, because there were a lot of people talking about this, and I'm really happy that I was the one who forced them to clear it up. He's going to say exactly what he said. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. He's never going to apologize for that. It was outrageous what he said. He basically accused Obama of committing a felony, a treasonous act. I mean, if Obama did that on his own, you know, or through the Democratic Committee, he belongs in jail. I will be yelling, lock him up with everybody
Absolutely.
Else.
Well, I...
He didn't. But let's just say if he did, it would have been unconscionable.
If he did, he would have then had to get a court order to do it.
No, I'm saying if he did it without a court order. If you did it with a court order, it's legal.
But think of it. You guys all are laughing at that. You've got the president of the United States accusing the previous president of a felony, and we're just kind of like, and I was laughing too, like we're taking it, well, here's just one more of those. I mean,
because
it's unbelievable. The president of the United States.
But the outrage over his tweets, I'm just done with it. Done with it.
He's tweeting.
He's not ordering the federal government to go do this or that. He's tweeting. He needs to stop tweeting. It might be the downfall of his presidency are his undisciplined tweets. I'm done getting worked up about.
If they go unchallenged, though, Kristen,
you're getting worked up about that.
If it does, if they go unchallenged,
am I?
Yes.
Then it goes
Touché.
Toward...
They're not going unchallenged. I mean, the press is all over him about all of these tweets. It's all everybody talks about.
So you're done.
You're done
with it, but it shouldn't be ignored.
Correct. Okay. Yes.
I mean, you've got Nunes, right, the House Chair of the Intelligence Committee, saying it's the reporter's problem because they tend to take the president literally.
Yes.
Did you hear that quote? Well, you guys, you know, you just take him literally sometimes.
I mean, again, I don't... it's like, it reminds me of Rod Blagojevich when he was getting prosecuted and we listened to all the tapes and he was stomping around his family room and saying all kinds of crazy stuff. That is how Trump is on Twitter. I can't get outraged about
everything.
Yeah,
there's no need to wiretap the guy.
But there's a difference, right? Blago didn't know he was being taped, and Donald Trump very clearly knows we're all supposed to hear this. It is, I don't know what his end game was in launching this, except maybe a distraction. And then I don't know to what end. Why does he want that?
He was pulling on threads of coverage that started last fall, and the Obama administration's efforts to investigate some of these Russian ties. So there were tiny little fibers of truth to what he turned into a tweet. But
I want to be as disciplined as you are going to try and be, Kristen, about this. I keep telling myself, don't go there,
I know.
Even though it's the president.
You keep getting mad at John Williams about his tweets.
I know, but maybe self-preservation, you know, for me is still not the...
Bullshit.
John,
that's crazy.
You're a radio talk show host, John. You have to deal with the streets like for an hour every day.
I'm sorry. You do not give this guy a pass. He's the president of the United States. If he accuses his predecessor of committing a felony with no evidence and then offers no evidence, he's got to be held accountable for that stuff. We can't just say it's just him being him. He's speaking as the president.
People do that, Steve. People do that, though. You go out in the streets and his supporters and the people that are still liking everything that he puts out there, they go, oh, that's the guy we voted for.
It's one thing to say Obama released 122 vicious criminals from Guantanamo Bay, which he didn't.
Bush released most of them.
All but nine of them. Yeah. Okay, that's Donald being Donald. But when you say, I was just told that Obama wiretapped me, we can't turn away from that.
And we're not. I mean, like I said, it has been covered ad nauseum. Nobody's turning away from it. But there has to come a point where we can't. The news coverage and our whole outlook on his presidency is determined by 140 character tweets.
Chris and I just came from a meeting, and in that meeting we had a long talk about North Korea, which is a really interesting and complicated and subtle problem. What do we do about North Korea? And I was thinking while we had this conversation, very interesting and very knowledgeable people around the table talking about it, much more knowledgeable than I am about it, thinking, how is Donald Trump going to handle the inevitable, it looks like, crisis with North Korea and all the little knobs you have to turn just a little bit with all the international partners to keep a lid on that situation? And I'm thinking, you've got a guy who just reacts from his gut and blurts out whatever he's thinking. And that is scary to me. I mean, you know, him accusing Obama of this ludicrous thing is only a signal to me of what is scary about this and why it is so ominous. When you've got real problems that requires real leadership and subtlety and nuance and stuff coming into it. Anyway, I'll get off my high horse.
No,
I'm feeling
I think
a little too starchy perhaps this morning.
I'm with you on that one. And here's just my last piece of ad nauseum, Kristen, and that is I think that if there's one truism about the administration across all fronts, it's they're sloppy. They're sloppy. Mm-hmm. You know, he misspelled tap and he misspells hereby. He used the wrong version of the word principle when he said American principles. And I do think it's
unprecedented.
It is not a big deal that some of us don't spell or use proper grammar, but it's a tell, isn't it? What sort of attention will they really put on North Korea, Eric, if the president doesn't even care enough to Google the right version of principle? That sounds... I don't know, elitist or something, but I really think that's a fair concern. Speaking of education, Chance the Rapper met with the governor. They talked about education, and Chance came out completely bewildered. What's your guys' thought about that meeting? Would you not have loved to have been a fly on the wall?
I wrote an editorial where I said, like, it had to be awkward. You have this Winnetka, you know, 61-year-old businessman billionaire and a 23-year-old Southside rapper in a room. And I think Governor Rauner does what he doesn't do well, which is, you know, he went on and on about how this is so hard and the Democrats are after me. And Chance was just sitting there like, dude, I just want to fix this.
Yeah.
And so the meeting did not go well. But the underlying issue is that Chance was in the wrong room, in the wrong office, talking to the wrong person, because you cannot blame 20 years of a failed school funding system on the guy who's been there for 2 years. He should have been over in Rahm's office. Rahm Emanuel runs the schools. There is no one more responsible for the condition of Chicago public schools than its mayor. And so I think Chance was in the wrong place.
You don't blame him for that, though. I mean, it's logical to go to the governor and ask about this sort of thing.
Well, they had like a Twitter conversation.
Yeah.
And yes.
But it's a practical matter, right. It's not all Ron or something.
What was the predicate of this meeting? I don't remember. Was it after the
Grammys, the governor tweeted him and said congratulations. And then he tweeted back and said, oh, thanks a lot. We should get together sometime. And so then they did to talk about education funding. Chance wants, you know, that $225 million amount that isn't going to go to CPS. Chance, you know, was interested in why that's not. Why isn't the governor making it happen? And then he gave him a lecture on school funding and property taxes. And Chance came out and said, I don't know about this press stuff. I just know the kids should be getting the money.
Well, with all respect to Chance, and also, you know, I honor him for his subsequent million-dollar contribution to the schools. You know, he's not a policy thinker about this stuff and doesn't – I mean, in some ways the governor is right that it's a complicated thing with lots of levers to pull and lots of constituencies to deal with. It's a complicated issue. And Chance's thing is get the job done. And Kristen's right. He should have been saying that to Mayor Emanuel and to the legislative leaders in Springfield. They all need to get the job done. It is not all on Rauner, for
but
sure.
The only thing is he didn't go after Rauner, right? I mean,
right.
No, he did afterward.
It wasn't like he said, you know, Rauner's got to fix this. I'm going to go talk to him. You know, they sort of mutually came upon this meeting.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't like he was trying to challenge him at the start.
That's correct. But I think the full court press on Rauner has been in the – you have Forrest Claypool, the CEO of public schools, saying that the formula is racist and blaming Rauner. You have Rahm blaming Rauner. You have legislative leaders blaming Rauner. So I do think he went into that meeting blaming Rauner.
Chance did. Chance's plan was to go in there and blame the governor.
I think he –
You're just saying based on the atmosphere just, he went
right,
in with.
If you pick up any newspaper, it's a pretty unified chorus of blame Rauner. And I think he picked up on that.
You know, my takeaway was, Kristen, was maybe the blame should be more shared. But I think Governor Rauner owns some of it. And if it's an embarrassing slap in the face, because the governor came out and the version I heard, too, was that the governor was saying, hey, we can help each other. It was sort of like Nixon and Elvis, you know, or maybe Trump and Kanye. It's like, I have a political agenda. You're really cool and famous. We can help each other here, right? And so he thought that he'd be able to sort of use as a lever some of Chance's popularity to forward his side
sure.
of the equation.
Mm-hmm. They're going to work on a new album.
Chance wasn't having any of it. Yeah, but everybody could win if this goes well. I don't blame you, Kristen, for at least citing that the blame should be shared. But I think a slap in the face to the governor or anybody who's had their hand in this is deserved, right?
Sure.
I don't have any sympathy for the governor on this
if
he didn't go after anybody else on that.
Can we talk a little bit about what's going on with Susana Mendoza? Kristen's column this morning dealt with that issue, and it seems like Mendoza, she's the new controller. She was elected in a special election just recently, Democrat, and she has been going after – she has decided that she's going to use this as an extreme bully pulpit, clearly has her eye on something bigger office, while, as Kristen points out, the other Democratic constitutional officers like Jesse White and Michael Frerichs are keeping kind of quiet, and Lisa Madigan's involved, but she's not nearly as vocal. Susana Mendoza is – out there.
I read that piece, Kristen, and thought, oh, for Judy Bart Topinka. Come back, Judy.
You know, I mean, so Susana, yes, she has a much different style. That's a nice way of putting it, but it's just different. I've watched comptrollers come and go. It's a bookkeeping type job. There were questions. Mike Madigan even raised questions long ago as to how activist that role should be. And she's, you know, she came in saying she was going to be independent. To me, independent means you're not so partisan and you don't weigh in on every turn of the screw that happens in Springfield. But she has done that. And she just, you know, basically got sworn in 4 months ago.
All right. So I haven't followed it so closely. So let me explain it from ignorance. And you tell me if this is the right understanding. She writes the checks. She pays the bills. And at issue is what funds or pools of money she writes the checks from. She's choosing to write them from funds, not the general funds, but specific funds, with the idea that those funds are going to run out of money and then embarrass the governor?
Well, I actually, I kind of agree with her on
that
point.
Is that what she's doing?
So my column was just more about her, how she's just been very strident since she came in. I didn't even address the latest dust-up between she and the governor. But, you know, usually the comptroller is a little bit more low-key, and she's not. And she really went after Leslie Munger during the election because
yeah, this was a great story.
Thought Leslie Munger was a shill of Governor Rauner. But I went back and looked at almost every press release that I still have of Leslie Munger's. Very straight down the road. If there was a problem with the bills, she placed blame on the General Assembly. She was not calling out Democratic leaders or House Speaker Michael Madigan. You know, she kind of played it straight. And Susana Mendoza is not. She's very, very one-sided in her criticism.
The issue you're talking about is where that used to be that certain employees from the state were paid out of the garage and facilities maintenance fund, and then that was cut back, and now Rauner wants them to be paid out of the general revenue fund. And it's a little complicated, but essentially you're right, is that she wants them paid out of that fund, and that's the fund that Rauner is wanting to keep robust, because if there's a strike or some other crisis in the state, he wants to have that as some fallback money there.
Yeah,
and Mendoza
yeah.
is draining that account. Now, whether, you know, how cynical that is on her part, I don't know. I mean, let's.
So they're both playing politics in the money and how it's being. He's stockpiling and she's trying to drain this.
Yeah, but, and both would deny they're playing politics with it, but let's say that they are. And you know, there is this simultaneous effort almost on the same day that Lisa Madigan is pursuing to the Illinois Supreme Court. Her desire that the state employees are stopped getting paid. There is no formal
authorization. Yeah, what's the latest on that, Eric? That's the last thing I want to touch on this. There's movement on that conversation, at least.
My understanding is that Lisa Madigan has gone right to the Illinois Supreme Court. She lost at the district level. She went and she is bypassing the appellate court and is going right to the Supreme Court, trying to get them to make sure that the state doesn't pay. And essentially, the idea is that there is no appropriation bill. There's no legislative authority for paying state workers. And the governor realizes that this would be a huge crisis if this happened. It would be not a strike, but it would be this, you know, suddenly dry up the funds for paying all kinds of workers that make the state go. And he feels, and probably correctly so, that this would put enormous pressure on lawmakers to come to a very quick compromise.
What do you think about this?
I just want to ask Kristen if I'm anywhere close to correct in my summary there.
Yes, okay, that's you're
and
exactly
Kristen,
right.
What's your take on that? Should we not pay state workers or treat them like that's what we're talking about here, right?
It is, and I mean we don't have a state budget, but we are still paying, you know, $37 or $38 billion in costs that arise every day, and payroll is one of them. So if we're not going to pay state workers, then why are we paying anybody? I think most people looked upon Lisa Madigan's intervention into this as suspect. She's been attorney general for all the while that this has been going on, that we haven't had a budget, but all of a sudden now she decides to try to press the issue. I mean, AFSCME's not happy about it either. They don't want to see their workers not get paid, and they were a little taken aback by her court intervention. So I do think this is a little bit of a lot of just trying to build up pressure on the governor.
Here's our recommendations for the week. Steve Bertrand, I want to ask you first. Do you have a book you're reading, something you're watching, listening to, or consuming that you like this week?
Yeah. Oh, Steve. Push your
I'm
button.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm
Mr.
here. I'm
Radio
sorry.
Guy. You got to push that button.
I'm reading a novel by Bert Solomon, a journalist, right? A longtime journalist in Washington. It's called The Murder of Willie Lincoln. And it's Willie Lincoln died of typhoid in the Lincoln White House early on. And it supposes whether or not Willie Lincoln might have actually been murdered. And so it just kind of goes into it. But I'm reading it just for the day in the life sort of the Lincoln administration. And a lot of it's about John Hay. Yeah.
Isn't there a book George Sanders just put out a book where he has Lincoln in the...
The Ghosts
of Lincoln.
Yeah, my son's been reading that, and he just says it's terrific.
Yeah,
just
I've heard
terrific.
That it's really good.
So anyway,
really
John Hay, you know, is Lincoln's personal secretary.
Yeah.
And which I didn't know much about him. He goes on to be Secretary of State, I looked up. So I'm kind of enjoying reading that.
Fair enough. By the way, Steve, I asked you first because we just finished Shameless. We powered all the way through.
Oh, I thought you were going to quit.
I was, but I hung in there a little bit longer, and you know how shows go. And I'm telling you, it remains Shameless, the William H. Macy story, or multi.
I don't even.
It's like seven seasons, and I'm back to recommending it. I recommended it, then I de-recommended it, and now I'm back to recommending it.
Well, we're watching it, so we're in season almost not quite to three yet.
Flip-flopper.
How about you, Eric?
First of all, it is Tripod Month. This is a campaign being run by a whole bunch of, seriously, by a whole bunch of different podcasting organizations. They want people to spread the word about podcasts, recommend podcasts to other
people.
You're
such a nerd, Eric. I love you for your nerdiness. This might top the
people don't know about podcasts. Keep going, Eric.
Well, they don't. There's something like only about 20-25% of people listen to podcasts. It's unthinkable when you have such quality as this program. But you know, tell people about podcasts. Show them how to do it on their phone. There are a lot of people who just who think it's weird. You have to pay for it. You don't. It's free. But what I'm recommending actually is a podcast. It's called Selected Shorts, Too Hot for Radio. Selected Shorts is this long-running program. I think it's NPR, Public Radio does, where they have someone read a good short story. This special podcast does not appear on the radio anywhere, and it's stories that are too racy in their language, their sexual content, whatever. And it's the stories are good. They're serious stories. Yeah, Kristen's got it.
I was falling asleep until I heard sex.
Is it naughty? Is it kind of dirty stuff?
I've heard a bunch of them. Some of them are they very.
Is it titillating? Does it work?
It's not erotica, John. It's like it uses language that you don't hear on the John Williams show.
I don't want to know what the measurement is of when it's working.
Adult situations and themes, probably like your average cable.
Okay. So, I am recommending this story that I heard last night on the way home on NPR. It was very touching. You can go to NPR's website and read about Liz Dunning. She is running the marathon to commemorate the birthday of her mother. And it was just, NPR, sometimes they have a phenomenal way of storytelling, and it's worth a listen. It's very touching. I would say jump off the broadcast when they move on to the teeth of gorillas and how plaque on gorilla teeth is teaching us a lot about, history. That was the next story.
Wow.
I mean, come
how
on,
very NPR.
I
them.
Know. Exactly.
It's going to be my other recommendation. Oh,
and
the gorilla plaque.
Four gorilla plaque stories. I'm sure they did a good job of it, but only NPR would take the time to do that.
Yes.
Fair enough. All right, that's Kristen McQuarrie, Eric Zorin from the Chicago Tribune, WGN Radio, Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. Kids, we will all, the next time we record one of these, be in the same studio.
It's so great.
Yay!
So my apologies in advance for my intrusion into your little coffee clutch there, but we'll all be in the same room, and that'll be fun. So thank you, kids. Thank you, Ben Cortez, our engineer, and our new producer of the John Williams Show on WGN Radio and of the Mincing Rascals podcast. We waved so long to Kristen Decker some time ago, and it is Elif Garris. Elif, thank you for producing the podcast and the show, and we'll drop another one on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!